I learned that real estate was good investment because you got 100% of the appreciation for a fraction of the value of the house, because you paid a small down payment, but yes, you paid a mortgage, but whatever appreciation you got, that's all yours to keep.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am so excited to introduce our guest for the day, Kalpana Shaam. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. Well, everyone, for those of you who don't know, Kalpana is my mother, my very own mom, who has taught me so much about the world and is now one of our passive investors at Lux Capital Investment Group. And I'm so excited to share a bit about her story. And I know, you know, she's not someone who comes on podcasts all the time. So thanks so much for coming on the show, Mom. Why don't you start us off? You know, well, first of all, everyone's, for those of you who don't know, my mom is a software engineer. She's retired. She worked for IBM for most of her career. And she and my dad live in Los Altos, California, in the house that I grew up in. And I'm just so grateful to her and my dad for everything that they've given me, really just such a strong foundation for what I'm doing in this work. And why don't you start us off, Mom, on your story with sharing a bit about, you know, what it was like coming to this country and how you were thinking about your finances back then?
Sure. So when we first arrived in this country, I did not have any skills that I could apply immediately to get a job. So the first order was to get some skills, and it was great. I went to school and we were free of any responsibilities, and I got a diploma in software and programming, as they called it at that time, and right away started working. And the first order of business was to realize the American dream, which is a house, a car, and a family. And so we achieved that very quickly. And we never thought about being lavish or taking vacations and things, but we wanted to establish ourselves being first generation immigrants. And fortunately, America had that opportunity for us.
Just real quick. So I just want to touch on one thing that you mentioned, which, you know, I happen to be aware of. So while you might have achieved that very quickly, tell us what it was like to buy a house back then, because, you know, you bought a house in, I think it was 1980, and rates were really high. So how did you guys do that? And what was that like?
So that was interesting. We were buying a house in California where real estate prices are really high. And there are so many factors, so much support and so much discipline that helped us get through, and so much persistence. So first of all, I was very sure that I wanted to live near Los Altos or in Los Altos because my sister lived here at that time, and we wanted to be close by. Second thing was how to come up with a down payment. So we did have a down payment, but not enough for a house from here. So we had to do some creative financing, which I persevered, and we finally did manage to find a way. And they used to have what's called balloon payments. And so while ours was not exactly a balloon payment, but it was along the same lines. The interest rates were 17% at that time. But by the same token, the down payment wasn't as high. So we did use up all our savings, and then we borrowed a little bit from the credit cards, and we also borrowed from family. And fortunately for us, within a year, the prices went up. And since most important thing is that both of us were working, we had good jobs, we had steady income. And so we were able to refinance within a year. The interest rates came down and the value of the house went up. I mean, we paid off our debts, personal debts and credit card debts within the first 6 months. So, and within the year, we refinanced. And so it was...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty, there's so much in that story. And I mean, for those of us who are buying houses in this environment where rates are, you know, somewhere between 2.5% and 3.5%, I mean, can you even imagine buying a house at a 17% interest rate? Like, that is just absolutely mind-boggling to me. And what did you, I mean, I'm glad to hear that you guys were able to get out of that situation within 6 months, rates dropped, et cetera. But did you go into it with the mindset that things were going to change quickly? Or how did you come to terms with this interest rate and taking on this kind of payment? And, you know, you were able to pay off family quickly, but what if you weren't? Like, what were you kind of planning for?
So I don't think we really had a plan, but our family was very, very confident because both of us were hardworking. And we had jobs very quickly, and software engineering was hot in this area. So they knew that we'd never default, or, you know, it wasn't that much anyway. So, and, you know, that's, family support is important.
Sure.
In that sense.
And then what about the interest rate? Like, did you, like, how long did you think you were going to have to deal with that interest rate?
So here's the thing. No one knows about interest rates, but they were definitely very high. And so there was, they couldn't have gone up anymore at that time. But the thing is that there was a formula at that time that the banks used, that how much of your, what percentage of your income should go into mortgage. And so obviously we met that from the get-go. So even if the interest rates hadn't gone down, we would have just been poor for more years in terms of house poor. That's the term, was house poor for more years.
Totally. I mean, I think that's a good point.
So we would have made our mortgage payments and we would have continued on and maybe delayed paying back some of the things. But
yeah,
our jobs was our security. And we had confidence when we were young.
For sure. Totally. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I have to remember that even back then there were lending standards and probably formulas. So, you know, as long as you were able to keep your jobs, you were going to be able to make those high mortgage payments. And thankfully rates did start to go back down. You were able to refinance, pay back debts. The house value of the house went up. But I just think that's so courageous, you know, thinking back to that time when we have it so easy now, you know, comparatively it feels.
So one thing I would like to tell people is that you do have to take that leap. You do have to have that courage. You do have to think about, there'll never be a good time. I mean, it's not like suddenly you'll have money and then the house price would be just right for you. And then you'll be able to maintain your lifestyle as well as have a house, as well as have a gardener and a housekeeper and, you know, all the perks that you need to keep your house going. So really just have the courage and don't wait too long because you'll never catch up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's wise advice. You know, like there's a bit of a leap of faith that has to occur and you just have to get started, even if it's scary and you don't know how it's all going to work out. And there's a lot of open-ended questions. So very good stuff. So, okay, so let's go ahead now. So you and dad both worked. I know that was really important to you growing up. Can you just talk a bit about the importance of having a career for you personally?
Absolutely. I grew up in a family where both my parents worked. And I couldn't think of anything else. Plus, I had gotten a good education, so I needed to make use of it. Plus, I had family support, so my children were well taken care of when they were young. And so my in-laws supported me, my mother supported me, my sister, everybody around me was very supportive. So, and it didn't matter that a lot of the money went to daycare. It's just that I knew there'll be a time when it'll all be worth it. And yeah, I mean, I did wonder at times, are my kids getting the best care and all of that? But, you know, it's something everybody has to deal with. And everyone, you have to be happy within yourself. If you're not happy, doesn't matter whether you're there for the kids or not, it's not going to work out. So,
for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And for you, what was it about having a career that, you know, contributed to that happiness that you speak of?
Well, you could call it validation, but I definitely was my own person at my work and I was achieving goals, getting awards, getting promotions and being recognized. And, you know, I had a set of friends outside our social life and, you know, it was good. It was, the job was very fulfilling. It was one of those where I got up in the morning and I was looking forward to going to work. Yeah. So, you know, I think I enjoyed my work so much that it kept me going.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. I mean, and it's, what a wonderful thing to have a career that's fulfilling for you. I also remember you teaching us that we should always be financially independent from, you know, a man in our lives or whatever. And I know not everybody
chooses that path. And that's obviously something, a very personal choice. But for you, why did you impress that upon us?
So it's funny you should say that. There was a coworker of mine, a guy, and we used to have lunch together quite a bit. And I used to tell him how I lost my father when he was very young. And he basically, after he retired, he just felt that he had no life and there was nothing to look forward to. He didn't have the people around him who cared about him as much. And he just didn't have a good life. He just passed away shortly after he retired. And so this person, this friend of mine, he would say, you know, the golden years are the best years. You have to enjoy them. You have to, that's when you get to relax. That's when, so that was one impression that, you know, so it kind of, you start liking a person or you start believing in them or you think that. So then he's the one who told me at one point is that, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. I don't know how it came up. But he says, you've got to have your own social security. You got to have your own independence and you've got to, you know, be a person, you know, who can take care of yourself. And I have no idea why he said that, but I felt that was really, really important. And although during my life, we've never had separate finances or anything with your dad, and we've all been the same, everything, I was confident enough, it's all good. But had things turned wrong, I had my own support. So, I mean, I could support myself. So it was very important. And I felt that security was very important to me. And I felt that I wanted to give that to my kids as well.
For sure. You know, that's so interesting because I just never actually asked you where you learned that from. And I kind of always guessed that you learned that from your mom, but turns out you learned it from, was this somebody at work that was like a colleague?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's so interesting. I just never knew that. So very cool. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, my mom took my sister and I to Bank of America when I was 6 years old and my sister was 4 years old and opened a savings account for us. And, you know, that was, I feel like that was something that not a lot of other kids had at the time. And it was something that I at least was conscious of, like, okay, I should have savings and I should contribute to them and grow them. And it was one important lesson about money that I'm just very grateful for. So thanks for doing that, Mom. And now let's talk about how things kind of evolved for you. So you guys, you know, obviously both you and Dad worked in Silicon Valley. And when did you start thinking about investing more?
So I have always wanted to grow as a person. So I used to take community college classes. And so one of the classes I took was small business administration. And I don't know where, somewhere I learned that real estate was good investment because you got 100% of the appreciation for a fraction of the value of the house because you paid a small down payment, but, you know, yes, you paid a mortgage, but whatever appreciation you got, that's all yours to keep. And that made a lot of sense. So we decided to buy a house, even though the down payment again was a problem. But, you know, once you have a goal, you start working towards it. First of all, our philosophy was, and this is just learned from people around you, really, it's none of it just came to me, was that, first of all, if you know, in the Valley, you could lose a job. And so they always said you should have 6 months savings. So we made sure that we had 6 months savings that we could continue to live the way we lived for 6 months, you know, pay our daycare, do this and do that, and rent mortgage and all of that for 6 months. So that was just savings that we had. And then the other thing was we wanted to put away for retirement. So 10% of our income always went every month to retirement accounts. So whether it be 401ks or just a savings account or whatever. So we wanted that stable background. But then, you know, once you have a goal of buying another house, because it's going to, you know, then you make choices. You say, well, instead of going to dinner, we'll just put our $50 or $100 in this kitty. And, you know, pretty soon that adds up and you're able to, and then you start looking and then you say, well, I need more thousands of dollars for the down payment for this house. And then, you know, start working towards it. So, you know, and then we did get the house and we did have a frugal lifestyle. I mean, still, I don't think I spared on the children because they went to all the Kumons and, you know, the music classes and camps. And I mean, that was not compromised. Whatever compromise was, our vacations, our eating, our discretionary spending.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Okay. So, you know, I mean, I think that's just like a really important lesson that frugality is an important part of most people's journey towards wealth building. And in your case, you know, you made choices, you decided not to compromise on, you know, our activities, et cetera, which I'm very grateful for. But, you know, we didn't necessarily go on the fanciest vacations when we were younger or eat out at restaurants a lot, like it was a special occasion. But I mean, you know, there's choices in life, and what that afforded you to be able to do is buy these rental properties, right? So you and Dad brought a few rental properties in Silicon Valley, which was not an easy thing to do, and were actually negative cash flowing when you guys got them, right?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yes, but at that time they had the tax break and the houses were new, so they didn't need a lot of maintenance. And so the negative cash flow was simply the rent wasn't as high as the mortgage. But, you know, again, the rent started increasing and the value of the house started increasing. And so it's just a matter of patience. I mean, nothing gives you money overnight. And our philosophy was that we want steady income coming in, and that was our jobs and whatever rent that came in. So we want steady income coming in rather than a big windfall. And so over time, I mean, we were living our life, you know, things were just happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you guys are for me, that story represents the epitome of this like statement, don't wait to buy real estate and wait. And of course, you still have to be aware of market cycles and whatnot. But if you buy right, then, you know, you got to buy now. And then over time, it grows. So really important lesson there. And for me, you know, that was an important part of me growing up, was just knowing that you guys had, I mean, it was in the background, but I knew that we had some rental properties and Dad would go there and like work on them after work sometimes. And it was just a kind of a common thread throughout my growing up that like this was a way to kind of shore up our family's finances. So you guys were active investors, meaning you were actively managing these rental properties. All right. Well, tell me more about, you know, what you thought about investing in other types of investing. Like, were you thinking about investing in the stock market? I mean, obviously you had your 401ks, and tell me about like why passive investing was eventually interesting to you.
So I only started passive investing recently after I retired. So there's a long journey between.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, let's touch on that then. Let's save that for a little bit later.
Right. So we invested heavily in the stock market for a while. And then there was the crash. And then we lost a lot of money.
Was it the dot-com crash?
No, not. It was before that. Okay. I think it was 87. I forget. I think it was 87.
Okay. So the savings and loans crisis is when you...
Yeah. So that we lost a whole bunch of money on that one. And, you know, so that was a big lesson. And then after that, we started just saying that we'll do mutual funds, leave it to the people who know about it. So at least that was good. We never lost, even whenever there was a real bad downturn or anything, we didn't lose that much money because portfolios were balanced and everything. So one lesson was leave it to the professionals, because it just takes a lot of time. I mean, we get, as individuals, we are too emotional. I bought a stock personally myself that went I bought it at $23 a share and it went down to like $1. I sold it at $1.
Oh no.
And I held it for so long, like holding on to it. And finally it was like, this is more of a pain keeping track of it than anything. So we sold it. But that was a completely emotional decision that I bought it. I liked the company and I thought it was doing well, and that was it. So we did invest in stock market. Then we also, did we try any other investments? Other than that, I don't think so. And we never bought lottery tickets. So we never thought of passive investing at that time. I think at that time, we did not have the means to do it, because to do passive investing, you needed a bigger amount of capital, and we didn't have that. So that wasn't it, but that's about it. Savings was really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, I think that there's some really good points in there. Like, you know, it's really difficult, but important to try to keep your emotions out of your investing life. We all want to feel good. And, you know, it's fun to invest in something that brings out, you know, positive emotional feelings. And at the same time, we need to be smart. So we don't want to necessarily gamble with our retirement savings, our nest egg. And so you got to strike a balance between feeling good about what you're investing in and feeling like it's doing good in the world. Of course, yeah.
Most of all, dealing in stock means you have to wake up in the morning, watch the market. You have to spend a lot of time in it, which we never did. We just didn't. Oh, today I have some time, so let me look at what's happening. Or, oh, some news came by. And oh, so that kind of laissez-faire investing in the stocks is not. You really need to watch it every day, see what it's doing, watch the curves and act on them. And we just didn't have the time for all of that. So that's why the mutual funds are much better.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, what else happened, I would say, before you started? Like, what do you want to pick out on your investing journey before you?
Well, one thing I want to say is that I really wanted to invest in commercial real estate. One of my friends was not a software engineer, but more like a chemist, and she did really well. That's what she did. She just moved into commercial real estate, and then but I'm not sure the details on how it happened and how she had the capital for it, but I suppose, but that was something that was attractive to me. It's just that we never got the opportunity for that. So I wish we had done some of that instead of just doing all in single family homes.
Mm-hmm. So your friend who was investing in commercial real estate, was she like, do you know if she was participating in syndications or was she buying apartments on her own?
Well, I think she started out buying real estate for her company. So her company would want to set up a new office in another city or even another country. And so she would. So that's how she got into it, because she got into the real estate arm of the company that she worked for, setting up labs, setting up production places and things. So, you know, that sort of opportunity I did not have. And yeah.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Well, let's fast forward a bit now because we're getting short on time. So tell me what it was about passive investing that was, you know, passive investing in real estate syndications that was appealing to you and how that experience is going for you.
So as we got closer to retirement, we were feeling more and more comfortable from our savings and 401ks and our pensions, and which not everybody has right now, but we were feeling very comfortable. So we did have extra money to put into passive real estate investing. Moreover, you came along and you showed us that we didn't have to invest huge amounts of money in passive investing in the private equity sort of deals. You didn't need to have a lot of money for it. So I was okay to risk a few thousand dollars on deals. And so that's what attracted to me. Plus, I had the time. I was retired. I didn't have anything to do. And, you know, I liked to learn. I did want to learn about equity financing. And so you came along and you were very patient to explain to me all the terms. And, you know, and I relentlessly asked you questions about, you know, what is cap rate? What is this? And what is that? To the point where I'm sure I drove you nuts. But you did educate me on that. And fortunately, there's a lot on the internet also to learn. So the more I learned about it, the more got into it. And when I saw the first deal giving the returns as promised, then I wanted to do another one and another one. And then I still wasn't sure whether I was keeping track of everything. So I made my own spreadsheets to track the returns and everything to see. And that was really important to me. And that was it just sort of becomes fun when you are, I mean, one can always go out on a big vacation or plays or dinner and, you know, then it's just eaten and done and gone. But I mean, you look at your spreadsheets, you can see what's happening and what's there and how you can, you know, analyze it a little bit more. And I don't know, it just gives me more of a satisfaction. I mean, I do everything now, all of those things that I mentioned earlier. But investing is an outlet for me now, much like I do my sewing and quilting and, you know, all of those things and gardening. This is another outlet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that journey makes a lot of sense. It's something that you don't necessarily go all in all at once, but as you start to learn more, and every type of investment does take time and energy to learn. And there is a bit of a hurdle. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we definitely try to do, is try to make it easier for people to understand how to get into these deals and what to look for and what to, you know, how to understand what all the players are and what their role is and what the timelines are and everything related to real estate syndications. So, yeah.
So I want to tell your listeners that you were very key to getting me into passive investing, because you answered all the questions very, very easily. If you didn't know the answer, you would go back and get the answers. And I was fortunate to have you there to get me all the answers. I remember at one time you said, well, you know, all the sophisticated investors already knew this. And I said, well, I'm not.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, I may not be a sophisticated investor right now, but at least I'm better than what I was a year ago.
Oh, yeah, you've come a long way. And yeah, I mean, I think that is an important point, and that all investors should feel like they can always come to me with any types of questions, big or small, difficult or not difficult. I want to know what's on your mind, and that helps me create content and figure out how to teach other people how to learn this investing skill.
And the other thing I want to say is that your company is providing a platform for smaller investors, and investors start small till they get confidence in you, which is not available from everybody. So you're doing a great job to get people who would like to invest, but either not sure or don't want to take much of a high risk, or it's still risky, but you know, it's a smaller amount that they're risking, and they start seeing the results very. So allowing the smaller investors to come in is a good service that you're providing.
I see. And is that because you mean other opportunities have like higher minimums, and so it's harder to get into those deals, and you have to risk a lot more when you get into those deals?
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, some of my friends, they've had to pay $100,000 a year to up to $500,000 in 5 years, and then find out things are not going well. And so, first of all, I wouldn't do that with a new person right away. So invest so much money, but $10,000, $20,000, I could start with and build confidence and then build up to $100,000 in one deal.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's a good point, is that, you know, it does take time to build trust. This whole business is built on trust. Like, that's absolutely paramount. And developing trust takes time and experience, and it happens incrementally. It doesn't happen all at once. So,
right. It's not just trust. It's the trust. The basis of the trust is returns. So if you provide the returns, you provide the returns consistently as you promised, and then you keep people updated what's going on. And if there's a change, you keep people updated, and that's what contributes to trust. But, you know, if I stop getting my payments, monthly payments or quarterly payments, as you promise, then the trust sort of starts getting shaky.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that you are bringing up a good point. It's important to try to match the returns as much as possible, our projected returns, which we definitely always try to meet, if not exceed. But there's another parts to building trust. Like, part of it is communication and also not promising the moon. You know, I mean, sometimes when we put deals, they're not necessarily like the most mind-blowing returns, although they're very attractive, I think, on a risk-adjusted basis. But sometimes there are people out there who are promising the moon, and, you know, you have to be able to know how to look out for that too, and not get sucked into the excitement of something that maybe can't be delivered on or won't be delivered on.
I want to stress again, though, that trust can be broken very easily, or can be shattered very easily, if the returns are not there. And it doesn't matter how much you communicate, if the returns stop, you know, the investment stops.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Very, very important points. And, you know, I really, really happy to have you and come on the show, Mom, and share your perspective. And thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your experience. Is there anything else you want to share with the listeners before we hop off?
Mainly that you're not going to grow wealth by spending. You've got to give something to get something. Yeah. And don't be lazy about it.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah. Wise words. Wealth building. It takes time and commitment, and, you know, it takes consistency. So thanks so much for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.